The red dust of the Pilbara does not just sit on the ground. It lives in the air. It finds every seam in your high-vis shirt. It settles into the pores of your face until your skin takes on the rusted hue of the iron ore itself. I stand at the edge of the pit at 5:30 in the morning. The sun is a bruised purple smudge on the horizon. The heat is already beginning to hum. Behind me, 64 men are waiting for me to speak. I am the only woman on this shift. I am the only person of East Asian descent on this entire site who isn't working in the mess hall or the laundry. I hold the clipboard tight. My knuckles are white against the metal clip. I have been an engineer for 12 years. I have designed haul roads that carry 300-ton trucks. I have optimized the flow of the primary crusher until the throughput increased by 15%. But as I look at the sea of white hard hats, I know what they see. They see a girl. They see someone who doesn't drink at the wet mess until 2 in the morning. They see someone who doesn't understand the vibe of the crew. "Good morning, everyone," I say. My voice is clear. It is steady. I have practiced this tone in the mirror of my donga for 20 minutes. We have a scheduled blast at 1100 hours on the northern face. All LV movements are restricted in Sector 4 from 10:30. I see a man in the third row lean over to his mate. He whispers something. His mate smirks. It is a small movement. It is almost invisible. But in the silence of the desert, it feels like a physical blow. I continue the briefing. I list the safety protocols. I detail the equipment maintenance schedules. I am technically perfect. I am professionally unassailable. When I finish, I ask if there are any questions. Silence. It is not a respectful silence. It is a void. They are waiting for me to leave so the real conversation can start. I turn and walk toward my light vehicle. I can feel their eyes on the back of my neck. I can hear the immediate shift in volume the moment I close my door. The laughter starts. The nicknames come out. None of those nicknames belong to me. I drive toward the administration block. The 2026 Mining Industry Diversity Report sits on my tablet in the passenger seat. It says that female representation in leadership has stalled at 6%. It says that cultural fit is the primary reason women are passed over for the superintendent roles. I am currently the acting superintendent. I have been acting for 9 months. The role is mine by every metric of performance. The KPIs are green across the board. The safety incidents are at a record low. I walk into the office of the general manager. His name is Greg. He has been in the Pilbara for 30 years. He smells like stale coffee and sunscreen. He is wearing a shirt that has seen better decades. He smiles when he sees me, but the smile does not reach his eyes. It is the smile you give a guest who has overstayed their welcome. "Sit down," he says. He gestures to a chair covered in a thin layer of grit. "We need to talk about the permanent appointment for the super role." I sit. I keep my back straight. My father taught me that posture is the first line of defense. My parents came to Perth from Hong Kong with nothing. They worked in kitchens until their hands were permanently scarred by steam and oil. They told me that if I was twice as good as everyone else, I would get half as far. I thought they were being cynical. I thought the modern world had moved past that. The board has looked at the numbers. Greg starts. He leans back. His chair creaks. "You've done a great job keeping the lights on. The northern face is looking good. The throughput is solid." "Thank you, Greg," I say. "I have the proposal for the Phase 3 expansion ready for review as well." He waves a hand, dismissing the document. "That's the thing. We're going in a different direction for the permanent lead. We've decided to bring Mark over from the Goldsworthy site." The air leaves my lungs. "Mark, I know Mark." Mark spent 3 years in Brisbane doing corporate strategy because he couldn't handle the heat on site. Mark has never managed a crew of 64 men in 48-degree weather. Mark is Greg's golfing partner. "I don't understand," I say. My voice is still quiet. I am fighting the urge to let it shake. My metrics are the highest in the division. Mark has no operational experience in this type of strata. Greg sighs. He looks at me with a patronizing kind of pity. "It's not about the spreadsheets. You're a brilliant engineer. No one is doubting that. But the superintendent needs to lead the men. You have to be able to sit with them. You have to understand the mateship that keeps this place running. The guys, they find you a bit hard to read. A bit cold." "I am not cold," I say. "I am professional." "Same thing out here," Greg says. He stands up. He ends the meeting before it can become a confrontation. "You're young. You've got plenty of time. Stay in the acting role for another month to show Mark the ropes. We'll look after you in the next bonus cycle." I walk out of the office. The sun is higher now. It is blinding. I walk past the wet mess. The smell of frying bacon and old beer wafts out. This is the temple of mateship. This is where the deals are made. This is where the promotions are decided over a shout of heavy mid-strength lagers. I am not invited. I am the quiet Asian girl who does the math so they can play. I go back to my donga. It is a metal box. It is 3 meters by 6 meters. It is my home for 2 weeks of every month. I sit on the edge of my bed. I look at my hands. They are stained with the dust. I think about leaving. I think about taking my degree and my experience to a firm in the city. I could work in a glass tower in Perth. I could wear clean clothes. I could see my friends. But if I leave, Greg wins. If I leave, Mark gets to pretend he earned the role. If I leave, the next woman who walks onto this site will look at the superintendent's door and see a man who looks just like the man before him. I open my laptop. I do not look at the mining report. I look at the internal whistleblower portal. There is a section for sexist or discriminatory promotion practices. I have been documenting every meeting. I have every email Greg has sent me where he told me to soften my tone while praising Mark for being assertive. I have the production logs that prove Mark's previous site had a 20% higher injury rate than mine. I spend the night writing. I do not use metaphors. I do not use emotional pleas. I use facts. I use dates. I use the 2026 diversity guidelines, which the company signed in a blaze of PR glory 6 months ago. The company claims to have a zero-tolerance policy for affinity bias. I am going to hold them to it. The next morning, I do not go to the pit. I go to the HR building. The HR manager is a woman. Her name is Sarah. She looks tired. Everyone in the Pilbara looks tired. I hand her a physical folder. I do not send an email. Emails can be deleted. Folders have weight. I would like to file a formal grievance regarding the superintendent appointment, I say. Sarah looks at the folder. She looks at me. Do you know what this will do? She asks. Greg is well-liked. The men respect him. They respect the system he built for them, I say. They don't respect me because he has told them they don't have to. I spend the next 3 days in a state of suspended animation. I am still the acting superintendent. I still give the briefings. But now the silence from the men is different. It is heavy with suspicion. Word has leaked. Greg doesn't speak to me. He walks past me in the hall as if I am a ghost. Mark arrives on day 4. He is wearing brand new boots. They are perfectly clean. He walks into the briefing room like he owns the earth beneath it. He slaps men on the back. He tells jokes about the flight in. He spends 10 minutes talking about the footy. He spends 30 seconds talking about the safety risks. I stand in the back. I watch the mateship in action. It is a performance. It is a way of excluding anyone who doesn't know the script. That afternoon, I am called to a video conference with the head office in Melbourne. There are 3 people on the screen. They are wearing suits. They look like they belong in a different world. They have my folder in front of them. "We've reviewed your submission," the woman in the middle says. Her name is Catherine. She is the head of operations. "The data you provided is compelling. We've also spoken to Greg," the man next to her says. "He claims that your leadership style was a concern for site morale." I look directly into the camera. My leadership style has produced the highest safety and production ratings in the Western Division. If site morale is defined by how many beers I drink with my subordinates, then Greg is right. But if morale is defined by a crew that goes home safe and meets their targets, Greg is wrong. I am not here to be a mate. I am here to be a superintendent. There is a long silence on the line. I can see Catherine looking at the production logs I included in the folder. She is comparing my numbers to Mark's numbers. "We are placing the appointment on hold," Catherine says. "We will be sending an independent auditor to the site next week to conduct interviews with the crew. It is not a victory. It is a stay of execution. The next week is the hardest of my life. The auditor is a man who asks questions about team cohesion. I have to watch my crew, the men I have protected for 9 months, be pulled into a room and asked if they like me. I walk through the camp at night. I hear my name mentioned behind closed doors. I hear the word bitch. I hear the word technical. I hear them say I don't get it. But I also see something else. I see the younger engineers. 2 of them are women. One is a young man of Indian descent. They look at me differently. They don't look at me with the mateship grin. They look at me with hope. They are watching to see if the rules actually apply to everyone. On the final day of the audit, I am sitting in the mess hall alone. A man from my crew walks up to me. His name is Mick. He is an older operator. He's been in the mines since before I was born. He has a beard stained with tobacco and skin like cracked leather. I thought he was going to tell me to quit. I thought he was going to tell me I didn't belong. He sits down across from me. He doesn't look at me. He looks at his coffee. "My daughter is studying medicine," he says. "She's smart. Smarter than me. She told me last night that she's worried the doctors won't listen to her because she's a girl." I don't say anything. I wait. "I told the auditor that you're the best boss I've had in 10 years, Mick says. "You don't bullshit us. You don't play favorites. You just do the job. Some of the boys are idiots. they'll learn, or they'll leave. He gets up and walks away. He doesn't offer a handshake. He doesn't offer a smile. But it is the first time I have felt like I have a place on this site. 2 days later, the decision comes down. Mark is being sent back to Brisbane. Greg is being reassigned to a corporate role. I am the superintendent of the Pilbara North site. I should feel elation. I should feel like I have broken the glass. I walk into the superintendent's office. It is the office Greg sat in for 5 years. I sit in his chair. I look at the photos of his golf trips on the wall. I take them down. I put them in a box. I look at the roster for the next shift. I see the names. I know which men stood up for me. I know which men called me names. I have to lead all of them. The mateship isn't gone. It has just moved underground. It is a cold, hard truth that settles in my stomach. I have the title. I have the salary. I have the office. But I am still standing on the outside. I have won the battle, but the war is built into the very soil of this place. I pick up the radio. All units, this is Superintendent. Briefing in 10 minutes. Sector 1. I walk out into the dust. The sun is hot. The air is dry. I am the boss. I am alone. I am exactly where I fought to be. It feels like nothing at all.